Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Court of Appeals. The panel has previously been introduced. I'm going to ask our marshal to call the last case for oral case presentation.
Now calling case number 8210167 in the matter of the welfare of the child of JMB and JW parents.
Thank you to the attorneys for appearing on the Zoom platform. I understand that attorney Natalie Netzel is supervising the presentation from a student attorney as far as appellate's role. And with that said, I just want to remind everyone to indicate who you are and which party you're speaking on behalf of before you make your argument. Each of you will have 15 minutes for presentation of your case in chief. Ms. Baker, you will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to utilize that. And if you have any audio or visual problems, please raise your hand or do something or put some chat message up and we'll try to tend to that. It does happen sometimes with the Zoom presentations. With that said, I'll turn to you, Ms. Baker. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Tara Baker. I'm a certified student attorney working under Professor Natalie Netzel and Brooke Beskow Warg. We represent appellant grandmother RN in this case. Process and its integrity matters to yield an accurate and just result. As such, the result was wrong in this case because it lacked integrity of process from a deficient petition, a trial with no shared understanding of the legal standard appellant's conduct would be measured against, misapplication of the law, and deficient orders. This court must reverse the permanency order and remand for further proceedings, as well as reverse the order to cease reunification and remand with an order for the county to make reasonable efforts. This district court's final order permanently severed not only the relationship between grandson and grandmother, who raised grandson and stepped up into the role of a mother for the majority of his life, it also impacted grandson's relationship to his sister, who was never adjudicated a child in need of protection or services, and she remains in grandmother's loving, committed, and competent care. The record is clear in indicating that grandmother was and is engaged in the process to reunify her family, and it's not a caregiver that's shirked the county services. With a properly alleged petition and new fair trial, with notice of the legal standard to defend against, this case very likely reaches a different result.
Ms. Baker, we all have questions. I'll yield to my colleagues. Judge Slater, if you'll start with your questions.
I just heard you mention, thank you, Judge Werke. Ms. Baker, you made reference to remand for further proceedings. And so if we were to agree with you that the court erred, and primarily on your first point, your main argument that termination of custodial rights, at least the basis provided under 325 of 260C is not legally sound, what are the further proceedings that would occur that you would anticipate?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor. The understanding is that the underlying CHIPS file remains open. This is a permanency matter that we appeal here. And so the reversal and remand for further proceedings includes, reinstating reasonable efforts, as well as the county certainly could file a new permanency petition with properly alleged basis to interfere with custodial rights. But the main part here is that the underlying CHIPS, we do understand, will remain open.
And just to clarify, then, is it your client's understanding, though, the legal custodial status that the court had ordered to the agency would remain in place, so nothing would really change from a status quo in terms of the child pending those additional proceedings you just explained?
Correct, Your Honor, correct. And to continue on the basis in which reasonable efforts could and should be made upon reversal and upon moving into a new stage of this matter, there are three errors that led to this erroneous result. First, Olmsted County failed to allege any statutory ground by which to interfere with custody in their petition to terminate appellant's custodial rights. This contravenes Rule 5404, Subdivision 1F of the Rules of Juvenile Protection Procedure, and in terminating appellant's rights pursuant to this deficient petition, the district court erred, and the cases In Re Welfare of TD and In Re Welfare of the Child of BJM and HW, both illustrate that the remedy is the order's reversal and remand for further proceedings. Second,
Ms. Baker, can I take you back a second to your earlier statement that I think you said that a properly alleged petition would likely end in a different result. In your view, what is the proper procedural path for the county to seek a modification of custody where it has concerns about the child's well-being, where the child is, where a third party has custody, not a parent, but a third party? What procedural path should it have pursued if we agree with you that 260C.325 is not the appropriate avenue?
I've anticipated this question, Your Honor, and will answer it because there is a gap in the statutory scheme of how custodians and, as you've stated, a third party should be treated under Minnesota law. It's ambiguous. But I first also must emphasize the responsibility to allege the legal basis to interfere with custody is entirely the petitioner's and the county's responsibility, not the district court, not for counsel of parent or grandparent to articulate a theory to extinguish their own rights. This is clear via the procedural rules. But how custodians should be treated, and custodians like grandmother, who has effectively been the only parent that grandson has known, should be treated under the law. The only fair and just conclusion is to treat her like a parent under our statutory framework.
All right, and then I have a question for you, Ms. Baker, because, and it's not the merits of the case, but it's how these are always bubbling up on appeal. So we have grandmother, who's a third party. Wasn't there an attorney for the child? The child, by my math, is 15 years old. I realize you're not representing the child, but was there not an attorney for the child in this case?
There was, Your Honor. There was a guardian ad litem and an attorney.
And an attorney? Okay.
Correct, Your Honor. And, you know, respondent acknowledged this.
I can then assume that the child did not want to join in this appeal.
Correct, Your Honor. In this statutory gap that we're standing in, respondent acknowledged this ambiguity on page 5 of its brief in stating that terminating custody is akin to terminating parental rights. And we know for the reasons thoroughly briefed that 260C.325, it's not a mechanism to interfere with custody or rights for all the reasons we've stated. And it's not as though custodians have a loophole in the child protection scheme where their custody cannot be interfered with. The solution is to treat her like a parent. So a petitioning county seeking to interfere with custodial rights, they should file a permanency petition that alleges a statutory ground under 260C.301, and the district court in determining the matter, they'll be in familiar waters instead of making a process up as it was forced to do here. They would analyze whether there was a valid statutory ground, whether reasonable efforts were made, and analyze best interests. And given the ambiguity, Your Honors, this is how grandmother must be treated. She and all other custodians, they deserve process.
Ms. Baker, let's assume again a remand for further proceedings as you articulated that. And let's assume further that the end result of these further proceedings is exactly what it is, was the court's order, with the exception of quote unquote, I think, because all the parties put, or you, at least your client did in your brief, the quotes around terminate custodial rights. But you did, it appears your client agrees that the case law is fairly clear that the juvenile court has exclusive jurisdiction, and 325 does mandate the court in the termination of parents, which no one is appealing here, assign a rights of the child to the commissioner. Is there a need for there ever to be a termination of custodial rights? And I'm talking from the county's perspective to accomplish what it attempted to do.
I'm afraid I lost the thread of your question, Your Honor.
I'm talking about, do we, maybe to say it a different way, would there ever need to be a gap filled in order for the county, and if the court finds the circumstances, which obviously from our order it did already, but on a remand might again, that it's not in the best interest of the child to return to grandmother, your client's home, does the gap need to be filled in because of exclusive jurisdiction? The child would be placed with the commissioner and in the placement, I'm assuming the home, I believe he's at right now near Cocado, for example. Does the gap have to be filled in? And to say it another way, I think that was your client's pretrial motion, if I understand, is we don't object to a termination of parental rights, but that ought not to affect the custodial rights. My question is, does it have to affect? Why did the county need to attempt to terminate her custodial rights?
Your Honor, Section 260.325, it doesn't extinguish any rights. The statute itself isn't a mechanism to terminate anything. And my apologies. The plain language illustrates it only applies after the disposal of rights. I apologize once again, Your Honor. I did lose the thread of that question.
Well, it was probably a poor question the way I articulated it, but we've been asking you that and you've been talking about this gap, and I'm trying to understand, is there a need for a gap to be filled in? I think your client was making that same point in the pretrial motion, if I understand, is we don't object to termination. You just have no authority under 325 to terminate my custodial rights. And that is your position yet today, even on remand, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. Correct. My apologies.
And yet the exclusive jurisdiction, that was what I'm getting at. The court otherwise, in its disposition, that's a proper order, if I understand your argument as well, under the juvenile statute.
Yes. Yes, if custodial rights are extinguished. Certainly the juvenile court does have original and exclusive jurisdiction to adjudicate the matter when seeking to interfere with custodial rights. And further, Your Honors, where Olmsted County have failed to allege a statutory basis, allege a valid statutory ground, it only asserted that it was in grandson's best interest to sever that relationship. And as such, the district court erroneously terminated appellant's rights absent a valid basis, and solely conducted this best interest analysis. And our case law, it indicates that considering best interests alone is simply not enough to permissibly sever a familial relationship. In the case In Re Welfare of Children of RW, the court noted that terminating parental rights based on only the best interests of the child ignored the clear statutory directive that rights can't be terminated in the absence of at least one statutory ground for termination. And further, you know, the best interest standard, it's a subjective standard, and other settings always require more. For termination of parental rights, it's the three considerations: the statutory grounds, whether there were reasonable efforts, and this best interest standard. Further, 260C517 governing permanency dispositions, best interest is only one of four considerations. Therefore, requiring a basis in law, in addition to competing considerations like whether reasonable efforts have been made to reunify the family, they serve to temper the subjectivity of a best interest standards alone. Further, Your Honor, with regards to the reasonable efforts, the district court's order on March 5th, 2020, it erred when it granted the county's motion to cease reunification efforts without two necessary components. One, citing a statutory ground to base that ruling on, and two, they didn't make any findings of fact as to why the order to cease efforts was justified based on the statutory ground. The order only states that reunification efforts with a parent are hereby ceased. Particularized findings are critical to a meaningful appellate review, and inadequate findings for juvenile protection cases in their disposition constitute reversible error. The facts indicate here that appellant used every service provided to her. In Re Welfare of Child of NYN, this court held that a grant to cease reunification efforts was not supported by evidence when there was no indication that appellant refused to participate in services provided to him. Grandmother was and is engaged in this process to try to reunify. She completed her parenting education sessions. She works with a therapist, took doctor's recommendations, completed a mental health evaluation, participated in safety planning, sought visits, sought phone contact. She still plans for his return. This isn't a caregiver that is disengaged from the process. Therefore, Your Honor, the order on March 5th, 2020, was granted in error. And upon reversal and remand, we seek this court to issue an order to reinstate reasonable efforts.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. We will turn to the respondent counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Deb Grayler and I represent Olmsted County Health, Housing and Human Services, the respondent in this proceeding. To begin with, I certainly acknowledge that this is an unusual case and that as the attorney for the county, we were not entirely sure how to proceed after there had been a CHIPS adjudication of the legal custodian. And then we had a child who did not wish to return home, and the county and the guardian ad litem believe that the conditions were not safe and appropriate for the child to return home.
When the trial was proceeding in front of Judge Allen, Grandma was off camera for the child's testimony. Is it detailed on if she had a problem with her attorney at trial? Is it detailed on to how or why that all happened as far as her complete participation?
Your Honor, the child expressed through his attorney that he did not wish to testify in the presence of his grandmother and asked that the testimony be taken informally. And so that was the judge's decision as to how the testimony would occur, that grandmother would be permitted to be present, but would turn her camera off and so would still be able to hear the child's testimony.
Oh, I misunderstood. I thought she was muted muted from hearing, but I understand. She was just not physically on the screen.
Correct.
All right. That was my misunderstanding. Thank you for clearing that up.
Yes, Your Honor. I think part of the difficulty here is that in reviewing the statutory definitions under 260C.007, there is a difference between how a parent is defined under subdivision 25 and how a custodian is defined under subdivision 10. So to proceed in terminating the legal custodian's rights under the termination of parental rights statute did not seem appropriate or proper, given that grandmother does not meet the definition of a parent under the other portion of 260C. And in this case,
why didn't the county first bring a motion to modify custody under 257C.06 relating to third party custody?
We did not do that, Your Honor, because of our belief that the juvenile court has exclusive jurisdiction and there had been a CHIPS proceeding in which grandmother as the custodian, in which the child was adjudicated in need of protection or services with respect to the custodian. And so when the county has custody, as 260C.325 indicates, then guardianship has to be awarded to the commissioner if there's a permanency proceeding. In this case, we didn't have a relative to whom we could transfer custody. The child was not old enough to pursue permanent custody to the agency or even temporary custody to the agency, because that order could only be in effect for a year under temporary legal custody. And so in this case, really the only direction to go, our belief was that if the juvenile court has exclusive jurisdiction, we needed to proceed with terminating the biological parents' rights and then also terminate grandmother's rights as the custodian.
Ms. Grayler, I don't know if you would specifically agree, although you sort of impliedly did by the you described the difficulty the county had in deciding how to proceed. And isn't that really the crux of appellant's point, is 325 appears to be the basis the court used to have authority to terminate grandmother's custodial rights. But would you agree there is no language in 325 that articulates an authority for the court to terminate grandmother's custodial rights? And as you point out, nor anywhere else in 260C to affirmatively end those rights. There's the modification, which may or may not apply, but that, under 257, I believe it is, but in any event, or maybe it's 251 or 521. But the point being is the statute identified by the court doesn't give it the authority to do so. And I think in your briefing, you even made a point suggesting that logic would suggest in this scenario, the legislature intended the court to be able to do that. I'm assuming from that, you haven't been able to find specific language other than your thought that logic would suggest that's the gap we're talking about. So would you agree that at least the law that the court thought, or at least articulated in its order, is not the basis to terminate custodial rights?
I would agree, Your Honor. And I think I did search far and wide and was not able to find case law, you know, or something in the statutes or rules that would apply specifically to the situation that we have here. And if I understood, I think your earlier question to opposing counsel, I think the question is whether under 260C.325, if the county has legal custody, would termination of grandmother's rights be required? Because that portion of the statute would indicate that if the county has custody and a child is not returning home, if parents' rights are terminated, then guardianship is awarded to the commissioner. So I think, you know, without knowing specifically what was in the district court judge's thinking, I think that's why the court made that decision. Our petition also did indicate, while not citing that statute specifically, a specific request at the end of the TPR petition that guardianship be awarded to the commissioner. And so, again, it's a difficult scenario when there isn't a specific provision in the law. Grandmother is the legal custodian. She certainly was treated by a parent in many respects. She was provided services. She had a social worker who worked exclusively with her to try to provide those services toward reunification, even leading to a trial home visit, helping to provide parenting education after that finding of physical abuse in the CHIPS proceeding, to try and assist grandmother with finding other ways to respond when grandson became agitated and escalated and not using physical discipline.
So, Ms. Graylor, can I ask the question? I think perhaps all of us to some extent asked Ms. Baker. So let's assume that we agree on that first issue, which that there was not a legal basis articulated by the court to terminate custodial rights. So we therefore remand. What issues would for the further proceeding would you identify would the trial court conduct on a remand such as that?
I think that's a very good question, Your Honor, and I wish I had a better answer, because we're in the same situation that we were at the time of this trial, in that we have a child who does not wish to return home, a guardian ad litem who does not support the child returning home, and those other options that I laid out before, permanent custody to the agency, that's only available to a child who is the age 16, temporary custody to the agency. We may be able to use that at this point if we could convince our district court to leave that in place longer than a year and switch it to permanent custody to the agency. And we also do not have relatives to whom we can transfer custody. So I'm not sure how we would proceed then with maintaining legal custody of the child, given the permanency timelines and the time in which a child is either supposed to return home or have some other permanent custodial type of situation. So I don't have a good answer to that. Under what is currently available under our statutes regarding child protection proceedings. And that is the difficulty here. Again, we have a child who does not wish to return home. There's been a finding of physical abuse. And we believe that the evidence that was presented.
Ms. Grado, let me ask you this question because, you know, we're going to end up with the ultimate decision and child and child's attorney chose not to participate in this appeal. Child testifies, doesn't want to go home. And he's represented. If we believe that the statutory path that's laid out for us was not correctly followed, and this goes back to Judge Allen, what happens when it goes back? I mean,
well, Your Honor,
would you start all over? And this, you know, this was Judge Sleater asked this question of the appellant, but I mean, we have this child, and that's the whole point of child protection matters.
Well, Your Honor, the child protection, the underlying CHIPS proceeding is still open and active. Typically, that would close once the termination of parental rights has occurred. So if the court is reversing and remanding, I think we would have to figure out how do we proceed and do the child's wishes remain the same? And can we try to use one of those other options and perhaps...
But that's what bothers me. If the child's wishes change, and you know, there's kind of a little bit of a ping pong here between, many children don't like their parents, and grandma, of course, was the acting parent in this case, and that was my concern about the child not participating, other than giving testimony and saying, you know, I want parental rights terminated, and perhaps not fully understanding what that entails. I mean, is this something that could end up being resolved in an entirely different fashion?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. I think the child's wishes at the time were very clear. He specifically said he did not wish to return home to his grandmother. The court found that he had a reasonable basis for and some understanding, gave some, I guess, for lack of a better term, valid reasons for not wishing to return to her care. And wanted to, you know, stay where he was. And I think we would have to try to figure out what is in his best interest if there's a remand and how we can proceed, given that that remains the case or theoretically will remain the case if this court remands to the district court.
Counsel, Ms. Baker suggested that the criteria for terminating parental rights should apply in this situation to grandmother's custodial rights. What are your thoughts about that suggestion?
Well, I think that that's perhaps the option that might make the most sense, given that, you know, a legal custodian and a parent are similar. I go back to that the definition in 260C.007, there's a difference between parent and custodian, and the termination of parental rights statute refers to a parent. And so that's the difficulty here, that that it isn't specified in the statute. Certainly that might be the next logical place to go in trying to figure out how her rights could be terminated, as we suggested here to the court. And again, she was provided services to try to correct the conditions that led to the out-of-home placement, had an attorney, was a party to the proceedings, and certainly had an opportunity to argue that her rights should not be terminated.
Ms. Grayler, am I correct that the court has authority upon request of a party or sometimes by agreement, and I don't know if that would occur, to extend the permanency timelines in the best interest of the child? And it strikes me, assuming I'm correct about that, everybody agrees the unique facts of this, from grandmother all the way to the guardian ad litem, the judge, I mean, everybody, it's not your typical situation. Do you envision that a possibility as part of a request to the court upon remand?
That, yes, Your Honor, I agree that there is an opportunity to ask that the permanency timelines be extended for good cause. And certainly this is a case that could fit into that that exception to the one-year permanency timeline for a child who is in foster care. At this time, I will rest on my brief unless the court has further questions, and I see my time is almost up. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Baker, back to you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Beginning first with a factual matter raised with regarding grandson and his wishes. Grandson is 14 years old. He has reactive attachment disorder, and he did express a wish at trial, as stated by respondent, to not be with appellant. However, the record is also replete with evidence that he seeks her comfort when times are tough. When preparing for transport to North Holmes, grandson fled from the caseworker, going back to grandma, where she was able to calm him down and try to, you know, get him to agree to agree to transport to the facility, and she facilitated that. The visits beyond that point, the visits between grandmother and grandson, they went really well at Woodland Hills, and his behavior improved at subsequent placements. The county hasn't offered any visits between grandmother and grandson because of this order to cease reunifications between March 2020 and December 2020. And currently, therefore, the question as to, you know, grandson's wishes and his statement at trial should be taken with a grain of salt. Further, respondent notes that petitioner, the petition asks for custody to go back to the county, and notes that respondent notes that appellant was treated as a parent in being offered services, given parenting education, but the petition didn't have any notice as to what standard her conduct would be measured against at trial. As I mentioned, Rule 5402, Subdivision 1F states that this law needs to be alleged in the petition, so everybody's informed as to what the issues will be and what standard must be proved. It's tantamount to and as dire as, say, a criminal complaint that doesn't reference the statute for the charged offense, and defendant is left wondering what elements the state.
Well, that's all this murky stuff with child protection, because, you know, even now, right, you have a standing order right now where grandma's parental rights have been terminated, but if child calls her up, he's not going to be taken away to a detention center, or grandma mails him a letter. I mean, these are, it's just murky. And I don't know that there is a lot of guidance that we can find as far as a statute, which is why we are asking questions about what happens if this does go back on a procedural matter. Is there anything else you would add? I unmuted myself. Is there any further instruction that you would suggest that this court give for guidance to the district court, or this thing could go on and on and on?
Understood, Your Honor. We've certainly acknowledged that there is a gap in the statutory scheme here. And upon reversal and remand, the agency, we believe the agency may be able to file a petition on remand, and we suggest the best course of action is to go about it through the well-established framework that is the termination of parental rights statutory scheme. The county certainly could file a motion to modify custody pursuant to 257C or transfer pursuant to 260C. However, we do suggest that the termination of parental rights standard could and should apply here to this longtime custodian. This has been the only parent that grandson has known. And Your Honors, as well, we also seek the reinstatement of reasonable efforts upon reversal of the March 2020 order to cease reasonable efforts.
So, Ms. Baker, if the matter were remanded and the county filed a petition alleging a statutory ground that paralleled those in termination of parental rights, you would not be objecting that that was an improper procedure?
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor. We would proceed under that statutory scheme. Ideally, grandmother would have a new trial, fully informed of the standard in which her conduct would be measured. And based on the failure of process and erroneous result that severed grandson from this devoted caregiver, this court must reverse the two orders in question and reinstate reasonable efforts. Thank you.
Thank you to both attorneys for appearing in this matter. These are tough calls, difficult matters for not only the trial court, but it's also the people that are involved at the trial court level and now us as an appellate body. We will be making a decision within the shortened statutory timeframe, which is 45 days, and hopefully this will give some closure or move matters along as it may be. And I do thank you for appearing on our Zoom platform today.